Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of the Detroit Football Network podcast. Justin Rogers in Houston, Texas. I am here in Southfield, Michigan. I'm Stoney. And Justin, I don't know, at about, I guess, 10 o'clock, said, well, this is not going to be a very happy night. They're going to lose. And yeah, what the hell? The quarterback's not playing good. You know, it's the NFL. There are games like this. No big deal. But lo and behold, they did what I wouldn't call it impossible. I'd call it improbable.
Yeah, I saw a stat. I think I retweeted it on Twitter that only one time in the last long time has a quarterback thrown five interceptions and his team been able to emerge victorious. This is one of the more improbable wins I've covered in my decade plus on the beat. I mean, it just doesn't make a lot of sense. The Houston Texans are a pretty damn good team. They intercept your quarterback five times. You know, we'll get into it, I guess, but, you know, Dan Campbell kind of let Goff off the hook on a lot of those. Goff also said he didn't feel like he was playing particularly bad in this game. A lot of weird circumstances, but it doesn't matter. It's five turnovers in the sheet. And, you know, to come back in the way that you did with the defense playing the way it did, to have your, all intents and purposes, rookie kicker knock down a 58-yard and a 52-yard field goal in the final 5 minutes, just an absolute remarkable game, and just chalk another one up into the moxie column for these Detroit Lions, because they just don't seem to be rattled or fazed by anything, and this might be the best example of all time.
It's crazy, and you know. So let's start. You know, early on in the game, and the first half was awful. I mean, Goff with the interceptions. Now you could sit there and say, look at all five, but the first half he had three.
Yep.
You know, one was a really good play by Houston's safety Petrie. He made a really good play, right?
Excellent.
Yep. Good. He's a great player. He tipped the ball. They picked it off. The other one was a fumble interception, whatever. He got crunched. Did he hold the ball on too long? Whatever. The third one was a Hail Mary. I don't even count that. You know, it counts, but whatever. So those were the three in the first half. The second half, I guess the one that was really bad was the one after Carlton Davis, and we'll get to him later, you know, intercepts the ball on the first play of the second half, and then they didn't have to drive that far, but boom, throws to Laporta, and either there was a miscommunication or whatever. That was a bad play. And then there was the long belt one, the JMO, that maybe that's the one where McCampbell said that's one he should take back, because he didn't say which one it was. I just don't – I don't like throwing to JMO deep in almost double coverage in that situation. I thought that was maybe a poor decision by Goff. But, you know, when he had to make throws down the stretch, he did. What bothered me the most in the first half was just the offensive line just was awful. I'm sitting there going, well, they missed Taylor Decker. They missed Taylor Decker. But you know what? They got it together in the second half. But the first half, the O-line was bad, and they just seemed really discombobulated to me.
Yeah, I think we've seen this before with primetime games in Detroit, right, where they're kind of new and exciting and fresh. And you got to remember, like, this Texans team wasn't good heading into last year, didn't get a lot of national love until they started turning around. So this is their last year for what we experienced in Detroit, right? And so they're getting that attention now. They're getting these primetime games now, and they feel the juice and the excitement. And I tweeted really early, like, that defense's energy matched the moment, and the Lions seemed overwhelmed by it, you know. And I mean, down to Penei Sewell, who very rarely lets you down. You know, he certainly got overwhelmed on that play that resulted in the fumbleception, as we will call it.
Yeah, that was all Autry made a great play, but
really did.
Got by Sewell pretty easily.
Yeah. Look, I'll be curious to see, you know, when I look at it closer, like where all the breakdowns came. Look, Dan Skipper had the day you'd expect Dan Skipper to play. Like, backup offensive linemen are backup offensive linemen for a reason. And there's a significant drop off. I thought Ben Johnson did what he could to protect and help Dan Skipper as much as possible. Dan Skipper said as much to me in the locker room that he had a lot of help from his friends today. It was the way he worded it. He also said he was, I can't say the words he said, but he basically said he was gassed in a way that he's never been gassed before after a game. Said he had an entirely different level of appreciation for Decker and Sewell and the jobs that they do. But the pressure was coming from everywhere. The Lions really had problems with it, and we expected the Texans offensive line to be the one that struggled today. And it just wasn't that way. The Lions couldn't run. They couldn't protect Goff. I thought he looked a little gun shy there at times late in the first half and early in the second half. But as this team often does, they find a way to get it together and to get it together in crunch time when it matters most and get the job done. And, you know, I've never seen anything like this game. Just an incredibly impressive show of, I mean, let's say it, grit. I mean, this was a gritty win when all the circumstances were against you.
Yeah, I certainly didn't think they were going to win. In fact, I live bet Houston at one point. Dumb me, you know, what the heck? It was not a good gambling weekend for me. But, you know, early on, I mean, their offense, Houston's offense, I mean, Stroud looked really good. I mean, yes, I mean, Michi made some big play. Michi, Tank Dell made. That was what was really the defense, you know, hung in there in the first half, except like on the first drive, it's like third and 10, they got it first down, third and another, they got, you know, they were making big third down conversions and that set them up early. But when all is said and done, it was the defense that ended up winning that football game for them, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. And I mean, look at the first half. It was kind of like the inverse of the Houston game, right? Like they had all these short fields, two interceptions gave them, you know, starting field position in Detroit territory. They had the punt return that brought them pretty close to the 50. And yeah, they gave up a touchdown on that first drive. And that was another run bust on the edge by Arnold. You know, yeah, the rookie's taking his lumps, and that's part of being a rookie cornerback in this league. And they held him to three field goals, and none of those drives were too long. You know, the late touchdown was probably the worst drive of the game for them. The touchdown drive at the end of the first half. And again, who was getting beat for the touchdown? It was Arnold. But, you go to the second half, interception, punt, interception, punt, 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 missed field goal. And who stepped up to force that missed field goal? Terrion Arnold, you know, for all the rough spots he had in that game. And he probably got away with pass interference.
Oh yeah. I was going to say, now, you know, the Lions are a really good team because they're getting the benefit of a bad call every once in a while. But you know, Goff was hit in the head. They didn't call that. So, I mean, that, you know,
they miss
calls. I mean, it was a game, you know, before the season started. You went through the schedule, and a lot of people had this as being a loss. I mean, because Houston was that up-and-coming team. They won a playoff game last year, and they're really good. And the fact that the Lions, you know, in the broader picture, maybe the bigger picture, you know, back-to-back weeks went into Green Bay and Houston and won. And the comeback that they had.
And take it back 2 weeks further to Minnesota.
Minnesota, right. Yes, their big comebacks were the Minnesota game and the Houston game. And it just shows you the mentality of this football team. And the injuries on both teams, because people say, well, I thought Nico Collins was going to play. He didn't. So they didn't have Nico. They don't have Stephon Diggs. They don't have Will Anderson. They don't have some other people. Lassiter got hurt. Another player got hurt during the game. The Lions don't have Hutch and Decker and, you know, Davenport and Barnes and Rodriguez, and Za'Darius Smith wasn't ready to play yet. So I think
sounds the injuries like football was in week 10 there, Stoney.
Complete wash. Both teams were down to playing a lot of backups at times. And in the second half, the Lions guys, they came out smelling like a rose.
I don't know about that, but they certainly will take the victory any way they can get it, right?
And yes,
I mean this gauntlet they just played. You said, you know, people probably would be circling this as a loss, and I think fans probably would have been happy to be 6-3 at this point, just given kind of the heart of the schedule here was pretty brutal, starting with, you know, the Seattle home game way back in late September at Dallas. Wasn't going to be a gimme. They struggle in Dallas. At Minnesota is always a problem. At Green Bay is always a challenge, and this game. And so, you know, if they would have come out of that with three losses, you'd have been like, yeah, that makes sense. Hopefully they're good and competitive. Well, now the schedule softens up a little bit, and you know, it's not going to carry all the way to the end of the season, but you sure welcome a nice 1 o'clock home game against Jacksonville to just make you feel better about life.
Yeah, especially it looks like Mac Jones is probably going to be the starter. You look at you look at some of their stats from their game. And it was a close game, but that's because Sam Darnold was like Jared Goff. He had three interceptions.
That's it was a gross football game. I watched a bit of that.
Oh, my condolences.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. All right, there was a few players that were definitely standouts in the game, and we'll let you know who those were coming up next. This is the Detroit Football Network podcast.
Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Justin, I want to mention a player who, for lack of a better term, had a renaissance in this game.
A renaissance.
Now, he might have made more of a mark by a mark on his pants in the first half, and that would be James Houston. Because James Houston had the game that everybody's been waiting for him for over a year and a half, basically. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. You know, I made a point. I looked for him and couldn't find him for a while in the locker room, and finally found him kind of towards the end. And I'm glad I did. I mean, it wasn't a long conversation. It didn't need to be a long conversation, but look, he had his first sack since January 1st, 2023. It's been, you know, getting close to more than a season and a half at this point.
Right.
And it wasn't just that sack, but, you know, it was a good play. He dropped into coverage on that one. Stroud tried to step up and maybe even scramble. And he has always had that closing burst that is rare. I remember the game against Chicago where he came like a bullet and got Fields on, you know, one where he was trying to scramble to the sidelines. And just that's one of Houston's best attributes. But it was the pressure in the fourth quarter that came on third down, again, like a bullet off the edge, you know, was able to dip under the offensive tackle, and Stroud had to scramble and end up dancing around the pocket, running into his own guy, fumbling the ball and ending the drive. And, you know, I just, you know, Houston, the way he described it, getting the first sack in a while, he's like, it felt like home. I've been missing my home. And I said, look, it's been an up and down stretch. I mean, there's no other way to put it. And that's maybe being kind, I guess. But I asked him like what kind of confidence this can build. And he acknowledged that like he needed that right now. He needed to remember who he is, what he can do. And the Lions need him to do that. You know, he's been playing a ton of third down pass rush. You know, that's what his bread and butter is. And even playing in those roles in the recent weeks, like it hasn't been there. It's been inconsistent to bad. And so for him to have that performance, I don't care who it was against, he needed it to build some momentum going forward because they are counting on him to a degree still. You know, I know you got Josh Pascal and Za'Darius Smith's going to join the mix next week. But I don't think they want to live with Levi Onwuzurike on the edge. I think they'd like to bring him back inside where he's best. And if Houston is giving you a little something there off the edge, you know, that gives you more flexibility, more leeway to put your players in the best position to, achieve the best success.
You mentioned one of the other players I was going to ask you about, because I thought that, after he missed a game or two, I believe. Yeah, it was two games, right? Josh Pascal. He was very active. I mean, I got his stats in front of me, but he was pretty much involved in a lot of plays. I mean, on the stat sheet, he really doesn't show up at all. So maybe I'm like, no, there he does. Four tackles. One assist, so it's a combine. And he had a sack too. So
two tackles for loss, QB hit. Yes. Like it was a good. Yeah. That's a good game. I guess the QB hit and the sack are probably the same, but I think before he went down with if people don't know, he had cancer in 2018. He still gets annual screenings. Had a mass that showed up on his shoulder that was concerning to the doctors. Had that removed, and tested, obviously came back benign, perfect, great. But it did keep him out of the lineup a couple weeks. But even before that, I thought he was playing some of his best football.
Mm-hmm.
He talked about this during the offseason and working with defensive line coach Terrell Williams about finding his identity as a pass rusher. And I think before first two seasons, he was trying to be a little bit of everything. And it just wasn't working for him. He's a very specific type of player. He's a power player. He's a physical player. And Williams said, embrace that. Embrace being physical. Embrace being violent. Embrace being nasty. And I talked to Pascal early as he was test driving it, if you will. And he's like, look, I'm just not there comfort-wise. I'm still getting used to this attitude of who I am and what I'm supposed to be. But those two games before he had to miss two games, I thought he looked really good. It's like, okay. I mean, he knew. And he recognized and he told me, I feel the burden to step up with Hutchinson out. He does. He has to carry a little bit more of the load. And this was a great example of a game where he did that again. You add Za'Darius Smith to that mix and you have not great edge rushing, but competent and capable edge rushing that rush in the style that Aaron Glenn wants. And I would say that the stat that most encouraged me from this performance more than the pressures and the sacks, Joe Mixon, 25 carries, 46 yards.
Yeah.
I know he had the touchdown. We already talked about the Arnold, but like, man, the Lions have struggled to stop the run the last three games. Not today. They were phenomenal. And I think Pascal was part of that and really everyone, but you know, him being back in the lineup was a factor.
And Chris Collinsworth mentioned, I mean, obviously it sounds stupid to us because we watch the Lions so closely, but Chris Collinsworth said, you know, for those of you who really not, you know, watch the Lions a lot or, you know, don't care, don't know about a lot of the gritty guys and all that stuff, he was basically, you know, going crazy over Aleem McNeil, which as we know he should, and he was really good today.
Yeah, Aleem is also on a roll, and I think you could go all the way back to Seattle. Maybe it's not every single game, but that's when it started to click, and you saw it in training camp. I mean, if you watched him in training camp, even when they went and had the joint practices with the Giants, you saw a guy that I felt comfortable saying that, yeah, last year was a breakout for him. This year will be a bigger breakout. And you know, it was a contract year at one point. It's not anymore. They paid him because I think it came right after that Seattle game, if I remember correctly, or maybe right after Dallas. Like they knew it was time to pay him because the longer you wait, the more expensive he was going to get. And I think you have to love, and really it's the identity and the character of this roster, but the guys that get paid just turn around and show you that they were worth every dollar they gave him. And he's just the latest stepping up and providing that kind of continued impact after getting the payday.
Another guy got paid, and he didn't have a great game, but Amon-Ra St. Brown, and they were pointing out on the broadcast again, and Collinsworth, I think, went a little overboard on it, but as Amon-Ra St. Brown goes, that's how the Lions offense goes. And it was apparent, especially in the first half, they were doing everything they could to double him and take him out of the game. And it worked. And that was part of the reason the offense was so bad in the first half.
Yeah, I mean, well, I still think it probably boils down to the offensive line, right? Like, if you don't have time to see it, then you don't have time to see it. But, you know, St. Brown's having I would say, an interesting season. You know, the production is down on a per catch basis. I think he's navigating some of that stuff that you're talking about just seeing different coverage looks, different levels of attention, which seems silly because he was so productive the previous two seasons. But I think the thing you take, as encouraging as he still seems to get it done when it matters, you know, that mm-hmm. critical third down at some point, and remarkably, seven straight games with a touchdown. And his touchdown was obviously very critical today. Came in the fourth quarter, and you know, I asked him about the play and tunnel screens. I don't love them. I feel like they're kind of like a back shoulder fade to me. Like it's almost like you're running a 50-50 play and hoping it works out. Maybe that's just all football plays, but you see it more because it's in space with a tunnel screen. But that one, as soon as he caught it, you saw the block set up. You saw Tim Patrick set up. You saw Penei Sewell pop out. And, you know, St. Brown moves like a running back in space. You give him a couple blocks and a lane, and he just knows how to get it done. And so seven touchdowns, seven straight games with a touchdown, new Lions record. I think they said sixth all-time. I don't know any idea what the all-time record is, but he's coming up on it, and I mean, I'm just not surprised anymore when they get any of these records because that's just who this team is. Speaking of guys getting going, I know he got hurt in this game and he might miss the next one, but it really feels like this was a nice game for Sam Laporta. I know he only caught three passes, but both those play action designs to him downfield were excellent. And that's where we just haven't seen him involved is downfield this year. You know, both those ones just worked to perfection. And so, you know, encouraging whether he misses next week or not, you know, when he comes back, you know, that is something to build on for this offense.
So you think it's going to be a lingering injury? You think did they say separated shoulder? Did they say anything?
No, Campbell said an AC joint. Sam went and got x-rays after the game, saw him leave the locker room and get, you know, driven down to the medical room. He came back to the locker room. He was the last guy in there. And I was just wrapping up, you know, me and Skipper were walking out together last two in there, and saw Sam and popped over his locker. He wasn't talking, but he was, you know, in a sling. I can't remember. I think it was right arm. And so AC joints are nasty. They're known as a gymnast injury, which is funny, or a car accident injury, because it's always based on kind of a violent collision. So obviously makes plenty of sense for a football player to get one. I actually had one several years ago. That is not a brag. It took me about 3 or 4 weeks to feel right.
Hold on. So in what game did you get injured in?
Oh, it was obviously the pommel horse.
Oh, okay.
I am not revealing the old man way that I injured my shoulder. I refuse. Sorry, podcast listeners. It's quite embarrassing. But with the training techniques that they have and all the resources they have, I would think he would be back in you know, a couple weeks. You could throw a harness on that. He's not a quarterback, and that's the position you worry about it the most, just because you need that range of motion in your shoulder. I would think, you know, within the next 2 weeks he'll be back in the field.
Running game for the Lions. It was, you know, hit and miss. Statistically, 105 yards, that's good, but it was only 3.3 yards a carry. Gibbs had that little stretch where he had like three or four within a 10 play thing where he really did some really good stuff. But running game, basically, once again, offensive line, it was a little disappointing.
Yeah, Gibbs had life on the edges in this one. There was nothing cooking up the middle today. There were, I would say, at least three that come to mind, maybe four, where Gibbs turned the corner and was, I mean, if the field was 53 2/3 yards wide, he might have been gone. And so his most important contributions in this one were a 15 yarder and a 20 yarder that were not back to back, but a couple plays within each other. And that set up Jake Bates' 58 yarder that tied the game. Montgomery was very quiet on the ground today, almost weirdly so. Didn't seem like he was, I thought he'd be a bigger part of the game plan. It felt like he was not a big part of the game plan early. Maybe only had two or four carries in the first half, but that screen pass he had late in the game. And that was, Skipper told me, it was a Ben Johnson special. Skipper had been beaten pretty badly on the previous play by Danielle Hunter, and Ben Johnson used that information from that play on the next one and said, let him beat you the same way, essentially, and we'll beat him with it. And so that's, you know, just the game within the game of an offensive coordinator seeing something, take advantage of something that we might not see is really impressive. And that was, you know, a pretty important play because that set up St. Brown's touchdown, I believe.
Yeah, turning a negative into a positive on that situation. Carlton Davis, obviously, with the two picks, but he also was tackling a lot. He had a great game, obviously. And once again, Branch was all over the freaking field.
Yeah, I mean, what more can we say about Branch? I mean, he's just such an exceptional player, and he, you know, he makes an occasional lapse, but all players do. He's an absolute star, and I've really kind of grown fond of the way Carlton Davis plays the game. He just seems like the longer he's here, the better he gets. You know, biggest knock on him forever has been his lack of interceptions, his stone hands. You know, if you can remember back to our interview with Rick Stroud, maybe the first episode of this podcast, you know, he joked about it. The only thing that I've seen from Carlton Davis that's concerning, and again, another part of his resume, if you will, I don't know if he's played an entire game, like 100% of snaps, maybe one or two, but you know, he's always, and just maybe just the nature of his physical play, but it seems like he's always coming off the field for 1, 2, 6 snaps a game, you know, from some kind of tackle he made or you know, some kind of collision in the open field. But the interceptions today were both really impressive, and the way he described the first one is he gave up a couple of those out routes, those short out routes early in the game, and his film study had revealed, well, Houston has success with something and they keep going back to it and back to it and back to it. And so he basically baited them into making that throw. He was ready to jump that route coming right out of halftime. Second one, he showed great closing speed. Just a really great game. And he relayed this story I thought was really interesting. He played here last year with Tampa Bay, said it was one of the worst games of his career. And I went and looked it up, and he gave up 7 catches on 8 targets. 3 of his 5 touchdowns he gave up that season were in this game.
Wow.
Including the game-winning touchdown. And he said to him, he always wants teams to respect him, and he feels like he had to go back and earn the Texans' respect because he feels like they didn't have any reason to respect him after that game. And so he just came out of the half with this whole point is, I'm going to make this team respect me. Well, Carlton, you did. You did.
And
it was a huge game.
And it was funny because they were showing on the broadcast the little pre-recorded Melissa Stark talking to Dan Campbell right before the half started, and he talked about, you know, we're going to get some turnovers. We are. We're going to get some turnovers, and boom. Right after they cut from that to the first play, he gets a turnover. It was incredible. All right, speaking of Dan Campbell, we'll address if there were anything, you know, coaching-wise that we didn't like. And also, I heard a new nickname for somebody. So we'll get to that coming up next. The Detroit Football Network podcast. More coming up next. All right, Justin, a lot of times, you know, Dan Campbell gets, you know, criticized for, you know, all the Campbell's Gambles, all those teams. Campbell's Gambles, you know.
I'd watch that game show.
Yeah, you know, and there was really nothing that he did that was really controversial except one thing, and because I'm a nitpicker, and then I was, because I didn't tweet that much during the game, and you did it, so I did not want to, I almost thought
I did it.
Retweeting. You did it. I just thought going chasing points when they went for two, it's a little too early for that. I mean, I understand he wanted to make it a one possession game. It would have made it eight, correct?
Yep.
But you, that feeling to me is, yes, that's great if there's no other points that are going to be scored, but there were. Then you scored them too.
Yeah, I got a little killed on Twitter for it. And honestly, like I said, I'm not an obsessive guru about it. And I love math, so I probably should go back and really take the time to study the analytics of it. Because I know, you know, some of it with 2-point conversions, but in this case, 26 minutes left in the game, so much still could happen. And really the scenario kind of played out exactly like, you know, it potentially could have, right? Like that Jake Bates 58 yarder should have gave you the lead. Now that changes everything. You know, maybe Houston feels compelled to go for it on fourth down. Like, you know, it's a whole butterfly effect conversation, but
right.
I don't understand the logic that late in the game, because I would rather be down nine knowing that I'm probably going to have four, five more possessions. And, you know, there's a possibility that I end up plus 10 in that conversation. And, you know, I would rather that plus 10 win me the football game than tie it up.
Yep, absolutely. Well, the guy who tied it up with the 58 yarder and then won it with the 52 yarder was Jake Bates. And I saw the PR director of the Michigan Panthers of the United Football League had this kind of elaborate tweet where you see him like in this, I don't know, costume, so to speak, Jake Bates, and with the big letters, Legatron. I think that's just a great name.
I think that one's already been taken. Isn't that Greg Zuerlein's nickname?
Oh, I don't know. He can't make a field goal to save his life these days, but I don't know.
Well, like that Legatron's broken, so maybe the new one steps in.
Yeah, I guess.
I will take this one on the chin. I was wrong about Jake Bates. You know, I was going off of visual evidence in making the declaration, but there was a practice right before they left for New York, and it was awful. It was awful. I mean, he missed probably half of his kicks that day, several from 42, 43 yards, and I thought either they were going to cut him that day or they were at least going to bring in some competition, and they never even considered it. Like, and every time we asked, it almost felt like we were being told we were being ridiculous. But, you know, I've seen the young, inexperienced kicker before get carried into the season and not be the guy, and, you know, saw him miss an extra point and maybe miss a field goal in the preseason. And you're starting to wonder, like,
Nate Freeze.
Nate Freeze was, and nothing against the guy. Like it was one of the biggest inexplicable disasters I can remember. Cause he was 20 for 20 as a senior, 20 for 20 at Boston College. It's not like he was kicking in conditions way harder than Ford Field, way more difficult than Ford Field. And, he just, I don't know, yips of, or whatever was going on with him. It made no sense, but I just didn't have any confidence in Bates being the solution. And I thought it was a really risky, it's like having a contending baseball team and not having a closer. Like it's a problem when it becomes a problem, and you didn't want your team that was a Super Bowl contender to have no kicker, but, you know, clearly whatever they saw in him, the patience they exhibited in this situation was right. What is he now? 14 of 14 on the season, something like that for field goals. I think he missed one extra point. Now has a long of 58. So he's showing the distance we always knew he had because he did it for the Panthers. Really, really remarkable story and impressive foresight decision making by Phipp and Campbell and Brad Holmes to stick with this guy when You know, the media, self included, were not sold by any means.
One final thing, Za'Darius Smith, very active on the sideline. I was kind of disappointed in play, but I understand long term it's probably better that happened. He will be a happier Detroit Lion. And Jennifer Hammond said that he reminded her of Rasheed Wallace.
It's the facial expression, the smile, the facial expressions. I covered the Pistons. I don't remember this like a long time ago when Sheed was here, and Sheed could be difficult with us as a player. I don't get that sense from Za'Darius. He's very gregarious, got a ton of personality. I know Sheed had a ton of personality too. He just didn't always show it in the way that I guess we wanted and hoped as media members. I think fans are going to love this guy. Just brings a great energy. I ran into him briefly as he was leaving the locker room before the locker room opened to media. And I, you know, just made a quip like, you know, hell of a first game, you know, with the new team. And I mean, just smiles and hand slaps and shakes. And then he ran, you know, walked away singing, "We got the dub, we got the dub." And just, he's so excited to be here. I mean, he was in a bad situation in Cleveland, and he didn't expect it to be a bad situation in Cleveland. By all accounts, he was a great teammate there, but to go from 2-6 to 8-1 just has to be so invigorating for a veteran who knows he's, you know, in the twilight of his career at 32 years old.
Well, we'll do this again next week from Ford Field, where they will be 9-1.
Oh, let me tell you, I can't wait for a 1 o'clock game.
I know.
I can't wait.
Tell me about it.
It's such a pitiful thing to be complaining about, but man, I mean, getting out of that stadium at 8:30 is so much better than it's 3 a.m. right now, and I got a flight in about 3 hours.
That's okay. I got to talk for 4 hours coming up.
You got to talk
6 a.m.
You got the 6 a.m. show. This is not healthy for any of us.
I know. All right.
You know what else is going to happen?
What?
Our producer Zach Clark is going to stay up a little bit after we hit this stop button here. And like always, he's going to produce this episode. So we are thankful for him. You know, that's so all the kids can hop in their car tomorrow. They can listen to it on the Odyssey app. They can listen to it on Spotify. They can listen to it on whatever else, Apple Podcasts. I don't know. All the places.
Yes. Yeah, subscribe.
Subscribe, download, rate, all those things. I'm going to keep writing for my site, Detroit Football Network, DetroitFootball.net. And I don't know where Will's at, but I assume he probably wrote some stuff for 97.1theticket.com. So check out all those things. But for Stoney, I'm Justin. We're gonna go to bed. Thanks for listening.
I'm sleeping at the station.
Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.